order. Start with approval of the minutes from October 8, 2012. Motion to approve them.
So moved.
Is there a second? Any comments, changes? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Public comments? I have nothing new from a chairman's comments point today, so we'll go on to the presentation. I think the WIC update is...
That would be me. My name is Pam Hallbuck, I'm the WIC director. And so today I just wanted to give a little bit of an overview of what we have been up to the past year. One of you, as I passed around the PowerPoint, one of you has my notes, so whoever has it can help me. Just wanted to today talk a little bit about... our caseload, our project statistics, to give a little bit of idea of who are the clients that we see at our office. A little bit about our breastfeeding peer counseling program, our second floor renovation and what that has meant to us in the community, the fit families and our farmer market again, and then a little bit about the WIC redemption and how that affects the community, and then our collaboration. So for caseload, who are we seeing each month? Generally, we see about 4,200 clients each month at our office. If you look at an unduplicated count annually, it's been averaging around 7,200. WIC goes up until the age of 5, so it's for pregnant women, breastfeeding postpartum women, infants, and children up until the age of 5. So I pulled together the data for last month. Can you move back one more? So I pulled together the data for October, and that month we have seen 397 pregnant women, new moms, 567, 999 infants, and 2,256 children between the ages of 1 and through age 4. Demographic-wise, for the month of October, 40% were Hispanic, non-Hispanic 60%. At any given time, when we look at the reports, about 15% will require assistance with interpreting and translation. And I have 4 bilingual clerks, so we're able to do that quite easily. As far as race, 65% are white, Black African American, about 19%. Those who classify themselves as American Indian or Alaska Native, 6%. Asian is less than 1, and multiple race, 9%. About 86% of our clients have the medical card. At the time of certification, though, about 6% have no insurance at all. So one of the things we work with is to try to get them hooked up with insurance. At the time of certification last year, 36 families identified themselves as homeless. There's varying degrees of that. Some of them, it's sort of a place living with somebody, but we did have a couple of families that were living in the car for family. We do have, at our office, a rental assistance program, and we're able to assist them in that way as well. As far as how do clients hear about WIC, almost half it's still from a friend or relative, so word of mouth still tends to be the biggest way that they hear about WIC. 29% had been on WIC previously, so really the goal of WIC is to use it when you need it. We do have people throughout the certification come off because they really don't need it at that point, and when they feel they need it or they have another baby come into the household, they reapply. We spend a lot of time doing outreach. About 8% of our clients have heard about us through there and through the health department. We share other places here at the job center. It's about 12%. One of the things we look at, though, is education, too, and so that when we're talking to clients, working with clients, as well as providing educational material, that is appropriate to their educational level. And 31% of our clients have less than a high school education. 45% have a high school education. Basically, 16% have 13 to 15 years, and 4% 60 years or more. One of the things with the three universities in town here, too, our percentages tend to be a little bit higher, too, because they're college students also. As far as risk factors, I wanted to include this today, so as we talk about collaboration, have a better idea of the clients that we're seeing and how important it is to be hooking them up with other programs in the area that they might be eligible for. About 57% of our clients are either overweight or obese, for pregnant clients at the time of certification. We're doing some work starting in January with postpartum women on some weight loss classes and opportunities to start losing that weight. About 10% have a low hemoglobin. 11% though have a history of having a preterm baby or a low birth weight baby previously. 28% conceived again before that 16-month period, which places them at a higher risk. About 7% of our moms are less than 17 at the time of conception. 5% identified depression as either having talked to a counselor or receiving medication for depression. About 20% of our moms smoke at the time of certification. And notice here, too, about 68% received prenatal care in the first trimester in Kenosha. Statewide average is 81%, so we've improved tremendously, but we still have some work ahead in that area. This is Tiffany. She's our breastfeeding peer counselor. One of the things we really work at is to encourage our moms to consider breastfeeding, at least try it. Initiation rate for breastfeeding is 67%. Prior to having Tiffany come on board, we always hovered around somewhere between 50 and 55%. So we've seen a tremendous impact on having her on board. And then just some information, because we tend to, in Kenosha, have a lot of babies that are born too soon and too little. And so for the most recent report that I ran, about 3.6% were born weighing less than 5.5 pounds, and 7.3% were born for 37 weeks. So our big project this year was really to make our second floor more usable. I don't know if anybody had ever been over there prior, but it was almost amazed with those 20 little offices that were probably a quarter of this size, scattered all over, and really not usable space. So what we did starting in January is gutted the entire second floor so that we'd have a conference room that we'd be able to have events or meetings, a hold of 35, that we'd have a teaching kitchen and a more usable space for F1 Delaware assistance programs. So the end of January, the walls started to go up. And then in the end of February, our teaching kitchen started to take shape. And this is our completed teaching kitchen. It was done at the end of April. Really an opportunity for us to provide education, not only giving them the checks to use at the grocery store for Rick, but to show how to use the kitchen. And we're talking about weight loss with postpartum, when we'll be able to do some teaching classes on cooking healthier. We just started doing some kids classes to where we have nutrition opportunities for the kids when they come in. So this month we're doing it on milk. So last week we had the one-year-olds turning on the blenders, the three-year-olds putting the blueberries in with the milk. So they get the opportunity of actually participating in eating healthy too. So May 1st, it's hard to see, we had our open house for the community, and it was really a time to let our community partners know that we had these services available as well. And then in August, we had an open house for the clients. We had, I think, about 385 clients come through that day. As part of the open house, though, it was an educational opportunity as well, so we had different organizations there to provide some education. So we had somebody from the bank talking about financial fitness. We had Kira from the health department there doing dental varnishes. And that one we're still trying to work out because the kids had different activities where they were eating, but with dental varnishing, you couldn't really eat afterwards, so then we're trying to get them to eat first, but they were coming to her with full mouths, so we also received a grant from Fitch Prevention Program to work with families to set goals on eating better, being more active. We finished our first year, we worked with 100 different families and are in the process now of getting their feedback. But one of the things they had said they wanted more is some more opportunities in youth settings. So that's something we'll look at in the next year. And we did have a Halloween event for them this past October too, where the kids were making some spiders with pretzels and doing something with bagels and orange cream cheese. So, and then there again, there were different stations there for the parents to learn different kids at the same time. To some of the kids that dressed up. The other thing I wanted to point out too is just with the WIC program, the effect it also has on the community too. We currently have 36 stores that are WIC approved to accept the WIC checks. We have a commercial company that does include some of the pharmacies too, which are only able to accept the formula checks. But each year, WIC brings in over $2.9 million into the community in the form of clients redeeming their WIC checks. And then our other program is the Farmer Market Nutrition Program, where clients receive checks that they can go to the grocery store to purchase the farmer markets to get locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables. And we also have the farm stand at our office, and that helps the farmers. It brings in about 20,000 each year. Also, it's really a win-win situation. And we do quite a bit of collaboration with not only the health department, but others in the community. Somebody from the health department is over at our office every single month doing dental varnishes. There's Hero Master Chief in my office doing some dental varnishes for a little one. Prenatal care coordination, and Betsy and Alan are going to be talking about that in greater detail. But what happens is when we enroll pregnant women into WIC, we let them know that at some point throughout the pregnancy, one of the nurses will be contacting them and talking to them about that program as well. And typically we refer somewhere around 900 women each year for that program. Mom Baby Talks, each event that they have, we have one of the WIC dietitians come and talk about nutrition, and then Stephanie talks about breastfeeding peer counseling as well. A lot of referrals back and forth, community events, we try to partner on those as well. And then right now we are in the process of applying for a fatherhood grant to support our dads that are coming to WIC too. Over the years, what we've seen is it used to be years and years ago where the dads would drop off the mom and not even come in. And then they started to come in and they'd wait up front. But now they're actually coming in and participating in the counseling sessions as well. So we thought it'd be a good opportunity to look to see if we can do something in the educational area for our fathers as well. And we also partner with several different groups for the parent talk lunches, where we provide education to moms about different things related to the health of their kids. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Yes, Mr. Hugh. I'm at 16% to see prenatal care here, and statewide average is 81%. What are other counties doing better? What do we need to do? What are your obstacles to not?
Yeah, it's multiple. I think with having a Medicaid navigator on board, that has helped tremendously. I think one of the things that we at WIC need to do is a better job in getting moms into WIC sooner too, so that we have more opportunities for, because what happens is once they get into WIC, then Los Angeles will take them and assist with getting them doctors too, but sometimes several weeks have to do that.
prenatal report.
Yeah, and we try to quarterly go out and do outreach to the doctors too, but if they're not getting into the doctors that soon, we need to try to reach them a little bit sooner.
And the remodel, were you able to use any volunteer labor or donated labor, or was that contracted?
It was contracted, but we were able to get it significantly reduced.
It's okay.
And the farm stand is once a week?
Yes, every Wednesday, all day long.
I think that's a good idea, especially for that.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one thing we noticed is, because what we do, we start a beach season, we do this canvassing where we go around to all the neighborhood to let them know about it, so we're finding that a lot of the neighbors are also using it then as well, so that's been a little positive. Next year, what we want to do is try to tie in the kitchen a little bit more, because we had some taste tests in there too, but want to start doing some cooking and type of stuff related to the produce too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just say, in terms of helping women get to prenatal care, I know that our clinic is trying to help women get their temporary enrollment and encourage them to get the patients they need in order to try to get that insurance kicked in. And a lot of doctors in the community don't like to take the temporary enrollment card, so we have to keep on moving on down the road so that that goes faster. My name is Betsy Smith. I'm the home visitation supervisor here at Kenosha County Division of Health.
And I'm Allison Menton, one of the nurse home visitors.
We're here today. Oh, can I sit?
You can.
Thank you. Sorry.
No.
Sorry, we're coordinating here. Pam talked a lot about our local statistics. We have some global statistics of why we think prenatal care is important. But obviously, becoming a mom is a transformative experience. It's a big change for anyone as they have a baby. Why do we care about, as you were pointing out, we care about prenatal care? Women who have very little preparation during pregnancy have a poorer chance of becoming a good mother. And if you're not as good of a mother, then your children are going to struggle more. And that's, of course, going to lead to problems down the road for them. If you look at the global statistics, about 36 countries have lower maternal, this is 2010 figures. But 36 countries approximately have lower mom, baby, and infant death rates. I mean, as we all know, we could do a much better job than what we do. Pam was talking about the percentage of low birth rate babies. We care about that because problems include respiratory issues, bleeding in the brain, they tend to have more stomach issues and heart issues and eye problems. That's just in the immediate birth period. And later on in life, it's been connected to more health issues. Other countries also do a better job at good health practices, such as breastfeeding longer than we do in our country. And they have a lower C-section rate. So, of course, we want to work with prenatal care. As you said, it's very important to help to make a change in this. So we want to have women to have healthy birth outcomes and to decrease the infant mortality rate. And, of course, our goal is to make a difference in our community. So the program that we focus on is home visitation. The reasons that we like this is that it's a familiar setting for the client. It brings the services to the family, and in doing that, we decrease the obstacles to service because I think any of the programs that work with at-risk clients encounter problems with a show rate and trying to get them through the services. And it's very supportive of the family life. It's an opportunity for us not only to meet with the client, but also to meet with other partners, other family members. Our clients are pregnant women. They live very complex lives. Pam has alluded to a lot of them and the different risk factors that they have. We currently at the department have two home visitation programs. We have the prenatal care coordination program, abbreviated PNCC, which we've had for 10 to 20 years. Cindy could probably give you the exact number of years we've been doing it. It's grown a lot over the last several years. And then our new program that we're very excited about is our Nurse Family Partnership program. I'm going to talk about the PNCC program. It is a benefit of the Forward Health Card. Women need to have Voucher Care Plus in order to qualify for that program. They need to meet a certain number of risk factors, and Pam outlined that very nicely. Use of tobacco, alcohol, other drugs, low education, language barriers, high and low birth BMIs, and old and young ages are factors that will qualify you for the PNCC program. The program works with pregnant women up to 60 days postpartum. The opportunities that we give them is information on health practices. We give them support, try to help them make good health choices, and we connect them with other programs in the community. The two meeting options that we have is we meet face-to-face, and we also do phone calls in between. And then, as I started to say, two types of meeting options is one-on-one or group setting. Traditionally, it's been a face-to-face one-on-one with the nurses. About 3 years ago, we started the group setting. This was loosely based on the center in pregnancy model. We called it our mom-baby talk. As Pam said, the women meet for like 6 months. Pam's and her colleagues, they come to talk about breastfeeding and nutrition and breastfeeding. We also talk about intimate partner violence. We talk about safe sleep and car seat safety. The point of trying to develop a group was that it provides a support for them, gives them an opportunity to be networking with other women who are in similar situations.
So Nurse Family Partnership, or NFP as Betsy said, is a new program to Kenosha County, which we are all extremely excited about. It's an evidence-based program, and the model itself is based on more than 30 years of evidence from randomized controlled trials. The program is different from PNCC because specifically it works with first-time moms. So that's something that we work with them to help transform their lives. The program has four nurse home visitors who work full-time. We also have Betsy, our supervisor, and then we have an administrative assistant. All of us went through extensive training this summer, and so the program has been up and running sometime in July. We started it this year. So some of the components for the program, again, first-time at-risk moms, which Betsy talked about some of those risk factors. The visits themselves, we like to enroll women, or we enroll women during pregnancy, and then we follow them through until the child reaches 2 years of age. And the program has, they call facilitators, but they're handouts for the women. And so as we're meeting with them and providing the education and things like that, we can leave them with these handouts so that way they have kind of a hard copy version if they want to read over additional stuff after our visit is over. We want to focus on improving, we want healthy birth outcomes, so we want the woman to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. We want to help her to build a strong support system around her and help them in identifying, setting, and reaching goals, not only for themselves, but their families too. The visits themselves take place face-to-face, ideally in the client's home or wherever they're currently living. They can take place elsewhere, though. If the woman is more comfortable meeting here or somewhere else in the community, we'll meet them wherever they want. But then we try to get into their homes if we can. But through the interactions, PNCC is more on like a monthly type basis, as Betsy spoke about, with the nurse home, with the Nurse Family Partnership Program. The visits are they're more frequent. So initially we're meeting with the clients on a weekly basis, then it'll go to every other week. And then again, we'll meet with them weekly once the baby is born, so we can offer them that additional support and education when the baby arrives. And then we'll go to bi-weekly. And the importance of that is just to help build that relationship, not only with the women, but again, their families and the child and things like that. This slide just shows what some policymakers have said about the program itself. One of the people, Tom Barrett from Milwaukee. Milwaukee has had the Nurse Family Partnership Program for a couple of years now. The program, the NFP program, is new to both Kenosha County and Madison. So we're both really excited to be involved in working with this program. Outcomes to improve prenatal health, so you know, helping the women to have healthy pregnancies, to help reduce childhood injuries, fewer subsequent pregnancies, so really getting education to the women about birth control and the impact of having pregnancies two kids together. And then again, to help them in setting any goals for themselves and their families, so employment opportunities. And also to improve the child's readiness for school. This slide just shows financial savings. So I think a previous slide had mentioned, but for every dollar invested in the Nurse Family Partnership Program, it can yield up to $5 in return. So that's a little bit about that.
So again, the differences between the two programs, ideally we're trying to get all our first-time moms into that Nurse Family Partnership because of it's considered the Cadillac of mom-baby programs when other health departments hear that we have it, they're like, oh, I've always wanted that. It's a large financial investment for it. As Allison mentioned, it comes with all of the program materials developed. Dr. Olds has spent 30 years developing these materials. They keep having new facilitators. One of the issues that we seem to be running into lately is, can I breastfeed if I'm smoking marijuana? And we've really been struggling with finding out what to tell these women. There's not a lot of research studies on breastfeeding marijuana. I think we're concluding that it's not a good idea, even though not the marijuana use. We know that's not a good idea. But it's, even though breast milk is so fabulous for the babies, the negative factors in the marijuana is just too much. And part of it, I found this interesting. I love odd facts. I apologize. I guess there's some naturally occurring cannabis in breast milk, which would explain that happy expression that all breastfed babies have when they get done nursing. So anyway, they are continually staying on top of the curve, doing new research, adding information as is possible. And so, as Allison said, there are four full-time home visitors doing that. They hope to get a caseload of 25 when we're up and running. We have two full-time staff working with PNCC. I also carry a small caseload at PNCC. They carry between 20 and 32 clients, depending on the month, because, of course, women have babies or women disappear for a while. Early prenatal care is hard because usually, you know, beyond the throwing up part initially in pregnancy, people aren't really thinking globally yet or big picture, and it's really not impacted their life very much. So it's always a challenge to engage and encourage them to be aware that, yes, even though this baby is only a half inch long, there's still a lot you need to do for yourself and for the infant. So anyway, continual services that we continue to offer is our Safe Sleep Program, where we provide information on how to prevent sudden infant death syndrome, to, you know, really warn people against that you can never shake a baby, they're just too vulnerable. We provide for a donation a safe, a portable crib for families that don't have a safe place for their baby to sleep. We continue with our car seat checks, and also again there too we offer a car seat for a small donation. We just got a wonderful donation to our car seat program from one of the HMOs. They just called out of the blue and said, we hear you have a great car seat program, we have some money, would you like to have it? Of course we said yes, thank you very much. First Breath is our program to help pregnant women stop smoking, which is now partnered with the state program, where they have developed an incentive program called Strive to Quit. And again, while they're working. We actually, the message about not smoking cigarettes is out there. People are starting to get it. They just haven't made the connection that smoking marijuana is still smoking. So that's kind of like the next step the state is also trying to focus on. And we continue with our Nurse of the Day services here at the clinic. So PNCC is for low-income, at-risk moms with previous children until the babies are 60 days, or until the moms are 60 days postpartum. NFP for low-income moms with no previous living children. They cannot be they can have been pregnant before, they just cannot have had a living child. And this is excellent because it goes until the baby is two. Health is our business. We're committed to a healthy Kenosha. We connect with the other teams in the department. We work with our community partners. It's our mission and it's our passion. We love what we do here with the Mom Babies. This is the name of our team, or the members of our team. So, questions? Yes.
You did mention something about, along with SAFES, if you talk a little bit about Never Shake a Baby. Are you doing any formalized education, such as like the Period Purple program or
No, but that
program?
Would be a wonderful thing to go on and do. Really, we have a part of our DVD that we show during the Safe Sleep education that talks about shaking baby, but we haven't taken any formalized steps to go into it. I used to do pediatric intensive care, and one of the first clients that I took care of for months was a baby who had been shaken. I don't think there's anything, you know, more devastating than seeing a child just like never
come. I know that there's a couple of really good programs out there, and I'm just most familiar with Period Purple, but
okay.
I think that, and that's the one that like Children's has adopted as
cool.
theirs, but just would be something I would maybe
Purple
recommend.
Purple?
Yeah, Period Purple. Ron Barr's done most of the research on it, but
okay.
It's an excellent program, and they do have like really formalized material, like a DVD that you can watch, and
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that. Some of the hospitals are using it in the OB units too.
I think that would be a great one, especially to get to partners, because there's that less, you know,
mm-hmm.
attachment there, and more easy to see it as an object.
Yeah, and one of the things with Period Purple is it's one of those. It's like a train the trainer, so the moms learn, and then it's their responsibility to teach their babysitters and their spouses and their, you know,
excellent.
Other people in the family. So.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It's Stacy.
I don't know why I can't get out of here. This one?
It's
there.
You did great. Okay, and give us a brief update on where we're at for public education. I know we've been talking about it for a while. We are at a very exciting stage right now, which I'll give you an update on. But it's been definitely a process, hence the road that seems to never end. But I think there's an end to that road. Just an overview of accreditation. It's a status that provides public health notification that an institution, agency, or program meets standards of quality set forth by an accrediting agency. Public health accreditation is a new thing. It came out, a year ago almost. And we are in, Kenosha County has been that first group that has gone for public health accreditation. It's voluntary, but it really is meeting a standard of quality, and that's what we're going for. Our goal to improve and protect the health of every community by advancing the quality and performance of public health departments. FAB is what is driving this. It's the Public Health Accreditation Board. It's tied in closely with NACHO that you see on the bottom there. And really, where we were a year ago to where we are now, and I mean FAB, us, it's really, a lot has been done. So it's really an exciting thing. We've seen, you know, a lot of entities being accredited, but for public health, this is a new thing. But why is it important? It's really helping us, or it can help us, identify successes and opportunities for improvement, which I'll touch on, promote quality initiatives, energize the workforce and develop a strong team, focus on common goals, evaluate our performance, align our resources with our strategic objectives, and deliver results. And I can say we've done every one of those things, wouldn't you say, Cindy?
Absolutely.
Going through accreditation. are going through this process. We're not accredited yet, but we will. What is the process? These are the steps, and I'll go through each of them. We are currently at step 3, documentation, selection, and submission. But I'll touch on, we've done a lot in those other steps. Researching accreditation was really our first stretch out into this, and that happened, well, about a year ago. We did receive through the state, it was a CDC mini grant specifically looking at accreditation, and they wanted health departments that got that grant to really research accreditation and start doing the preliminary steps for it. We started looking at the requirements, and then they really outlined nicely at the time through the self-assessment guides the steps for going through accreditation. There were prerequisites that you had to have in place, which we spent a lot of time just getting these put together before we went into the nitty-gritty of getting our accreditation things together. But you had to have a community health assessment. We did complete that in December 2011. You had to have a community health improvement plan. You completed ours June 2011. And you had to have an agency strategic plan. We completed ours in November 2011. So it was check, check, that was done. Now what? Well, basically, exactly a year ago is then when we did our application process for accreditation. There was an online orientation that you had to complete. We had Cindy and myself and some other staff. We have an accreditation team, which includes basically management, a couple other members. Everybody completed that online orientation, and this is all done through FAB. Assess your readiness, and that was basically, do you have all those prerequisites? So we made sure we had those put together. And you had to inform FAB your statement of intent to apply, which we did. And then it was actually an application. It was all online. There is a fee to do FAB. We had to complete that. And then basically, once our application was received, FAB reviewed it for the completeness. It was all sufficient. Then there was a in-person training that we had two staff members. I was close to having my baby, so I couldn't go. But we had two staff members go last December. And then after that training, we had a year now to submit all our documentation. So, and it has taken about that time for us to put everything together. So this is where we're at right now. So from January to currently, we have collected documentation according to standards and measures. And the standards and measures are all put together by FAB. It's a thick book. There's 11 domains, and I'll talk about them. Each domain has up to 20 different measures in there, and each thing indicates a specific document that they want as an example. For instance, it could be a certain policy procedure. It could be that you have agendas with letterhead and dates. I mean, it's very specific, laid out what they want for these measures. We, since January, have been compiling all the documentation, in some cases developing things that we didn't have. So a lot of this was assessing where we were, what we had, and then if we didn't have it, forming little work groups to put stuff together that we didn't have. So it really had us look at how we're doing and forced us almost to put things together that we didn't have at the time. We then had to organize everything, because again, these are 11 domains, and each domain gets further and further, so you have a lot of folders. We had to come up then with a way to formally file everything electronically, because this is all electronic. So any documentation that we had that wasn't electronic, we had to scan so that we had PDFs and so on. Once we submit our documentation, which I'll talk about kind of where we're at, FAB will review everything, and they do a preliminary review to make sure that everything has dates, everything meets kind of their standards with letterhead and so on. Once that's complete, we will get then signed up with a FAB person to do a site review. So they will physically come here and go over all our documentation with us, ask questions. It will be an intense process of them really sitting with us and going through everything that we put together. They'll then develop a report. I'm still, a lot of, because we're in that first round, a lot of this is still being worked out. I'm not sure once that site visit happens if we'll have time to make changes or if that's it. I'm hearing some conflicting things on that. But once that's complete, you get the stamp of you're an accredited health department. That does not mean you're done, because the accreditation is good for 5 years. So you'll have to go through the process, or we'll have to go through the process again in another 5 years. So this is a continuous process for us. If you're if they don't see that you met everything, your team will recommend opportunities for improvement so that you can go through it again if you choose to and fix those gaps that you have. Again, it's for 5 years. They recommend opportunities for improvement, support quality improvement, and required annual reports. So you will have to submit, even when you need accreditation, you do have to continuously provide them annually with annual reports, quality improvement projects. So again, it's not just you get that stamp and it's done. It is a continuous thing. If you aren't accredited, you can submit an accreditation plan within 90 days. And then work towards that plan. And again, this is kind of reiterating what I said. And this is how the standards are put together. So it's, you have domains into standards. Standards have measures. Those measures then have the documentation and so on. And again, it really all ties in right with the essential services for public health. These are the domains. So you can see domain one looks a lot at population health status. So this was a lot with our community health assessment, community health improvement plan. Domain two looks at health problems, environmental public health standards. Domain three, inform and educate about public health issues and functions. A lot of that was with like public information, press releases, so on. Domain four, engaging with the public to identify and address public health problems. So a lot of the committees we have where we're looking at different issues that we have entities from the community on, focused on that a lot. Domain five, public health policies and plans. There's a lot with our policies, a lot with our public health emergency plan, our emergency operation plan, is a lot with that. Domain six, enforce public health laws. Domain seven, promote strategies to improve access to healthcare services. Domain eight, maintain a competent public health workforce. A lot in that was, does your health department have a training plan for staff? Do you meet certain competencies? Domain nine, evaluate and continuously improve health department processes, programs, and interventions. A big part of public accreditation is looking at quality improvement. We were doing quality improvement in the health department. It was pretty informal, though. So this really drove us to make a formal process for quality improvement, which now we have a quality improvement plan. We have a quality improvement team. We have teams out there doing projects, so it's really flowing nicely. Domain 10, looking at evidence-based for public health. Domain 11 was a lot administrative management capacity. So that was a lot with. Domain 11 was a lot, I guess I can say. Domain 12, maintain capacity to engage public health governing entity. Board of Health came in a lot with Domain 12. And I don't mean to gloss over this. It was very extensive, all these different domains. Reasons to apply, again, accountability and credibility. Cindy really saw the point of going for accreditation and really making the health department the standard up there. There's only a few health departments in Wisconsin that have gone for this, and we're one of them. And I think it really shows what we're capable of here in Kenosha. It's really a great thing. Potential increased access to resources, So, you know, in grant writing, it'll look good that we say we're accredited health department. Also, just in the community in general. Opportunities to improve, I think that's been a key part for us, is really looking at ourselves as a health department, what can we improve on, and putting those things into motion. We are not alone. You can see here, these are the different, you'll see the population of the health departments would seek accreditation. This is just a survey they did. Would seek accreditation in the first 2 years. You can see, you know, it's kind of all over the board. But we're in that middle one, in the 186, which is the one that has the most, or the middle area there, the 186. It's just kind of showing that some health departments really see the importance of this, and some, I think, are waiting for the first group of health departments to kind of go through it. I know I've gone to meetings with other health departments in Wisconsin, so is Cindy, and a lot are waiting to kind of see the first group has to say about the process, I think, before they go through it. But we weren't scared. We just went ahead and did it.
Percentage want to do it.
Moving forward, our documentation will be submitted to FAB this month. We have everything uploaded. We're just doing one final, because once you hit that button, it's a scary thing. So we're just doing one last kind of look at all our documentation, just to make sure all our T's are crossed, everything's dotted, everything's what we need. Then again, FAB may have some questions, comments, and then we'll basically wait for our site visit. But in the meantime, we are not done, because we're continuing with our quality improvement that we have going on. It's going to be, it's really part of our lifestyle now at the health department, is, you know, what is the problem, how can we fix it, quality improvement. And again, it's just the beginning. It really drives health departments to go through that continuous quality improvement process.
Cute little question.
I summed up like 2 years of work.
Yeah.
Any questions?
I don't have a question. I just have to say that I had the opportunity to do some of the documentation review. It was amazing. I mean, the number of pieces in this slide is, I don't even know if you can even, is it like hundreds, is it 1,000? It's enormous.
It's a lot. And I can't take all the credit for it. Every person in our health department has had some touch on accreditation. So it's really been a whole team effort. It's not, you know, I've been there to kind of drive everything, but it's really, everybody's had a hand in some little piece of accreditation, so.
I do want to thank Stacy for her leadership, though. Over the last 2 years, she coordinated this project, and as Betsy amplified, it was an enormous effort. Those of you that have gone through JACO, you know the pieces that we're talking about and the amount of documentation that you have to collect to prove that you're at that standard and that measure of capacity and protocols. And so I really want to as Stacy mentioned, all of our health department, every person has participated at some level, and it was an enormous feat, and I knew we could get there, and we will. We just have, you know, go through the final phases of this, but I'm well assured that we're on our way to being accredited, and we'll be one of the few, I think there's West Dallas and three, that's it, that applied for this year, so we're taking that machete and paving the way through the forest. And actually, I don't think the national board hasn't even set their first site review. So they had to train everybody to even go out nationally to all the health departments. West Allis pushed the button in February, and they still don't have their site review scheduled. So it will be sometime in 2013 as FAB learns how to do this process and make sure that they're doing it correctly.
So and that has been one Stacey. Thing with being one of the first is they first rolled everything out, all the standards and measures, and then about 6 months later they changed things. So being one of those first, you kind of have to be willing, be a little flexible because things change a little bit. But
yeah. So you've done a tremendous job. So thank you for your leadership.
And are there any other questions?
Do you anticipate that we could be accredited in 13?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The ones that have once get pushed about, because the two counties were accepted in a reasonable amount of time afterwards, not a year and a half later?
Well, what they did is they got all their documentation together, they submitted it, but then they're waiting for that site review. Okay. So as Cindy said, they had to train all these site reviewers, so that, again, was a process. So I think now they're just ready
to start going out.
Start doing the
right. They hired everybody. They pushed the button in February, but then the board, FAB, did not even hire and train until June this past year. So then they had to all, you know, mentor them as they learned the whole process and what to really look for to say that someone proved the documentation of to meet the measure. And so they should be just, they're just starting now to go out and do the site visits. So I would say I'm looking mid, I would say next summer. I would anticipate they would come and see us as long as they kind of stay on target. So about this time next year. If we have that document in hand, we'll all do the part and dance.
Well, thank you.
Cindy.
Okay.
Well, actually, maybe I should. Corporate counsel?
Nothing to report.
Out of whack here. Anyway.
Okay.
Yes.
First, I want Supervisor Dodge. I don't think everybody knows who you are, so I'd like to introduce yourself.
Supervisor, 5th District. I try to attend most of the meetings that I can and try to stay on top of everything. I'm a new supervisor. There's a lot to learn, so that's why, why I'm here.
Thank you very much for attending our meeting.
As much as I can.
Great. Again, I just a few updates. One of the handouts that you received are the 2013 presentations. This is just a draft. So if you have any suggested revisions, please let us know. You approved the dates to meet at the organizational meeting, but these are the presentations that we just uploaded and selected. But if there's something that's missing that you'd like to see, just let me know and we can make that adjustment. Board of Health member, the additional member, I'm still waiting to hear from the county exec's office as he's seeking an additional member to fill a vacant position. The county community outreach, Stacy just gave her FAB review, which has really been her major project besides all the other plates that are up in the air. At this time, environmental health team, they're still working on the health space data system. I know I've reported on this previously right now. There's a slight glitch with the state and it has to do with data transfer. Technology doesn't always seem to happen as easily as we all hope. And so it's just that, you know, upload, download piece of the data and whose data. I see many of you smiling with that one. Right now, we're also doing reviewing our established license programs and just surveying other counties for rate comparison, just doing an assessment, taking a look at what other alternative systems that are available in regards to inspections. And what we did discover is that the restaurants have, they determine restaurants based on their complexity. So their degree of food handling, is it open a pizza package and you throw it in their pizza oven, or is it making sushi? I mean, there's different levels, different degrees of complexity related to food handling and hygienic practices. So we're doing a cost analysis, and as we get closer with more information, we'll share that with you. But I think it's time to take a look at the program. It hasn't been reviewed it for some time. Let's see, also the technology and tools, environmental department is looking at notebooks, smartphones, how can they do their work more efficient based on having the appropriate tools as they're out on the road and decrease mileage and improve their time out and about. Lab, Carlton expects a letter of approval for our ASCLAD audit within the next week or two. And right now the lab is reviewing their laboratory testing and any potential missed opportunities for Medicaid billing. One example are gonorrhea plates that we've been doing for years, and we might have a missed opportunity that we could capture. HUD, they're closing out this demonstration grant, and they're spending down all the available funds and with the completion of units. Nursing, the KCC, not expansion, has gone very well. We've seen increased number of clients, and thanks to Pam, we're collaborating with her clientele on Thursdays. And the reproductive health team, reproductive health team, there we're looking at an expansion program and partnering with WIC. You saw the second floor. We're looking at partnering and capturing some of those pregnant women, 900 of the 2,100 annually, and improving their health. Also, our Wisconsin Well Woman program, we've screened 283 women to date. We were, based on our state contract, required to meet a goal of 210, so we far exceeded that for women that needed mammograms and PAPs that they were far behind on having those health care. Our grants, our Kenosha Life Course Initiative, will be submitting a proposal that's titled Dismantling Racism. We're one of the four local grants that are going to be submitted to address and improve the African-American infant mortality rate. Healthy People Wisconsin, our suicide prevention initiative, we just received a Kubli grant to purchase gun locks. We'll be getting 12,000 gun locks for the price of 5,000 because the company is going out of business. And so that was a double win. And then we'll be distributing them locally and statewide. Our preparedness program is converting their communication system, and the Wisconsin HAN, the Health Alert Network, will transition to a PCA portal, which is a partner communications and alerting portal. So that'll be more training for our staff as we implement this new piece of software into our program for alerting in regards to any incident that might have, any event. Also, the health vulnerability assessment, HVA, which some of you participated in completing that lengthy survey. The state is now, they've assembled all of the information for all the counties, and it'll be on a dashboard, which you would be able to go in and activate. Our fiscal department, our 2012 revenue summary, we are currently at 87.3% of our budget as of November 2nd, which is 7.5% up compared to 2011 revenue. And so I just want to say that all our staff is working to fulfill their strategic revenue goals, and which equates to health initiatives, of course. Staffing, we'll have an all-staff meeting this Wednesday. We'll be showing our 2013 budget review to the staff, and also there'll be some program presentations. I think Betsy gets to do another run of her presentation, and the teams, all of our teams, which is environmental, lab, nursing, and HUD, they're all developing their 2013 strategic goals, which I'll share at the January meeting. So one last thing, another little kudos to the health department. Just want to share, if you happen to take a look at the Injury Research Center, they have their report from the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Foster, you're an alum, probably get this. Well, anyway, Kenosha has a full page about our suicide prevention initiative, which is, we're on our second grant cycle, and we're making great strides in regards to the improvements that we share throughout the state on how to address suicide. So, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you. Any other questions, comments? A motion to adjourn.
Pam, thank you. Betsy, thank you. Both wonderful presentations.
Good.
Thank you, everyone.
I'm always amazed at all the things that